There's one thing I know, it's how to make you feel right at home. This is the podcast by Chicago in Arabic, featuring stories and ideas coming out of the Arab and Arab American communities in Chicago and around the nation. Coming to you from Chicago, these are your hosts, Malik Abdussamad and Anwar Gibran.
Welcome to another episode of our podcast. We have a really exciting episode this week. Our guest today is Basit Al-Madani. Basit is a good friend we met a few years back. He's a musician, has a really interesting background, and we're looking forward to chatting with you, Basit. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Basit, you grew up in Ohio.
Yes.
And you come from immigrant parents that came from Syria, right?
Yeah, I'm a product of immigrants from Aleppo, Halab, Syria. My father immigrated to the United States in the late 70s. And so we were born and raised in Northeast Ohio. And I studied in Central Ohio at Ohio State University and moved to Chicago close to 10 years ago.
That's awesome. And have you been back in Syria?
Yeah, we would visit frequently growing up. Every year or two, we go for the entire summer because my entire extended family was there. So I had about 12 aunts, uncles, 50, 60 cousins.
Oh, wow.
So it was a big family every year. But now it's been close to a decade since I've been able to go.
That's awesome. So you must be a food expert having family coming from Aleppo, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's always a plus.
All right, Basit, we're so glad to have you here. So we just want to chat with you about your childhood growing up, and your passion to music. Did you feel that you're passionate to music since you were in school, or how did that develop?
Since I was really young, actually, I grew up playing violin. It was important to my parents that we were really engaged in different activities. So we all played music and we did sports and kind of had that opportunity to explore what felt right. And They gravitated towards the classical instruments, and
right.
I played violin. And after a while, I was in a college town and was surrounded by a lot of the indie rock movement in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah,
and I got into drumming for a while, and then from there, fast forward maybe 4 or 5 years is kind of when I first really dove into songwriting. So kind of later towards high school, going into college, is when I first, picked up a guitar and a piano and would just kind of start creating and singing and writing a lot. So from there, I was a singer-songwriter all throughout college and until I moved to Chicago is when I first started working with a full ensemble.
That's awesome. Did you have any, or were you part of any bands when you were in college?
I was, I drummed in different bands and then as a solo artist, when I was doing my singer-songwriter material, I would collaborate with other artists too. So sometimes I play solo, and other times I play with other people. But I kind of knew I was set up my whole life to move out of Ohio, and I knew I'd be either Chicago, New York, or LA, kind of a bigger market where there was more music opportunities. So I didn't really kind of dedicate to a specific group until I kind of created a new foundation somewhere else.
Nice. We all know that Syria and Aleppo especially is a music city, has a lot of culture and music. Do you feel your background from Aleppo influenced your passion to music?
That's an interesting question. I think more so over time. I think when I was younger, it's like, because I liked the indie rock, and it's weird when you grow up in the U.S. and you're also Syrian, and it's like you look at what your parents listen to, and it felt like cheesy when I was young.
Yeah.
She also listened to, whatever, Celine Dion and Gloria Estefan,
right.
And then she'll put on some Ukathum, And
yeah.
It's like, oh, whoa. I didn't know what to really make of it, I think, when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the deep sense of historical context behind Syria and specifically Aleppo as an artistic center.
Exactly.
Now, I think as my life has progressed and I'm reconnecting so much more with my roots, moving to Chicago and understanding what it means to be a Syrian person in the United States right
mm-hmm.
now, I really have this newfound respect for what it means to be from this place that is so historic and was such a powerful music influence in that region. Mm-hmm. So I think definitely more in recent years.
In recent years, nice. Yeah, we all know like how beautiful your songs and music are. Do you think like recently when you start writing music, writing songs and composing music, do you think now after discovering your roots and all that that influenced your kind of music you're doing, like make it like a fusion music, if we can call it that?
Without a doubt, yeah. I mean, especially it's like I grew up with like around this indie rock music, but was in, you know, I was obviously we listened to a lot
mm-hmm.
of other types of music through in the house.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to Columbus, Ohio, to
mm-hmm.
Central Ohio, there was a big kind of folk movement, like indie folk.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when I really first started writing
right.
so much. So now you have this already like a weird fusion of indie rock with like indie folk.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then moving to Chicago to a completely new place and doing so much soul searching and going through some really intense experiences, particularly in
mm-hmm.
my first few years in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Drew me to dig in and under, you know, to study music and what I found sort of established this timelessness in music. And that's when I really gravitated towards artists like, you know, Stevie Wonder or Otis Redding, Al Green, Marvin Gaye. And I'm like, man, like these artists are so emotionally connected to what they do. And I wanted to understand that. And I decided like from that moment, like whatever inspired me to create that, it had to have this emotional saturation
Nice.
To it.
Of course.
So it's really like, whether it's rock, whether it's folk, whether it's jazz or funk, you know, like we are inspired by so many different
mm-hmm.
sounds,
mm-hmm.
but there's this backbone of like having a soulful, emotional connection to the music.
Nice.
You know, I really have to jump in and attest to your passion in music. I've attended multiple of your concerts, and one thing that really grabbed me is the kind of music is not necessarily like the thing that I grew up listening to or the type of music that I listen to all the time, but you know, your passion and the way you performed
yeah,
it was really, like, so grabbing. I mean, I always wanted to come back because I felt like you're grabbing my attention, whether I like it or not, with, like, how... I mean, like, seriously, the music is good, like, the words are good. Seriously, and, like, yes, like, there's so much passion there, and I felt, like, you know, kind of, like, unintentionally, like, obligated to listen and enjoy, and I really did, and I kept coming back, you know? So, like, I really commend you for that, you know?
Thank you. I got to see you in concert here someday.
Yeah, well, let me bring it back to you going to college. So you went to college for business, and then you finished and got multiple business positions, right?
Yes. When I went to Ohio State University, I studied logistics management and international business. So I actually ended up with two separate business degrees and pursued that path. I graduated to it in the heart of the recession. So it was like 2010. And I'd done an
mm-hmm.
internship the year prior in Chicago with the Sears corporate office. And it led to a full-time position. And really, like all of this was kind of like I said earlier, it was very, it was formulated, right? It was finding a position that allowed me to get into a bigger city, but have a flexible enough schedule to be able to really push what I was doing musically. So that was the clear path for me because I had some family and structure like in the Chicago area, and it was close enough to have somewhere to build on, and it was like kind of this natural transition into Chicago. But I worked at the Sears corporate office for 4 years in inventory management, and then I moved to Cars.com, where I kind of continued sort of in this like logistics management, project management type of role, and then I left about a year and a half ago, kind of jumped ship and I've been full force in the freelance world ever since then.
So walk me through the moment you told your parents, I'm quitting my corporate job.
Get out of here.
I mean, I'm sure they believe in you, but like walk me through it.
It was, you know, my parents were, both of my parents grew up sort of like middle class in Syria, and I always think about my grandmother on my father's side. Is, you know, she had to kind of keep it a secret that she was working a second job to make ends meet. And when my father figured out, like it was, you know, he dedicated himself and his summers to reading textbooks and like whatever he needed to do to be able to create a better life for his family
mm-hmm.
and for his eventual kids and stuff. And you know, he really instilled that in me and my brothers growing up. Especially since we grew up in the States, he didn't want us to. He wanted to inspire us to be like hardworking people. I'm sure you know so many Arabs understand that dynamic.
The immigrant DNA.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. So yeah, I've always sort of like there was always kind of a plan, and I always studied really hard. And it's like whatever kind of I did on the side musically is like okay, that's fine as long as you're like practical in what you do. But it was really hard for them to ever envision like somebody being successful in the arts. And my brother in particular, he really tested that boundary because he's a photographer, a very successful photographer in Chicago.
Impressive.
Yeah. Next episode. There you go.
I would love to have him.
Unbelievably talented. And, you know, he pushed the envelope definitely with that. And my parents kind of always thought it was, they never understood why I spent as much time as I did dedicating towards music. And but they're like, you know, it's okay because he still has his business job, so it's like we'll work through this. But you know, I did increasingly grow tired in the jobs that I was doing. I'd been in my last position for 3 years, and 3-4 years in a corporate environment, it's like kind of a natural beat to reassess and say like, what does my professional development look like? Whether it was jumping into the next corporate job or diving really deep into this music, like that's kind of where I was at with it. And my parents, you know, did not agree. they were terrified of this thought, but you know, I talked to them like in depth and explained to them the type of, you know, traction we were getting through this music and how important it is to be able to have the type of access that we do through this particular project. I mean, whoever doesn't know, we play this soul and funk driven music. It's traditionally Western. It's traditionally American. But I'm a Syrian person with an entire family that has been impacted by the issues happening over there. So I can get into so many of these spaces around the country where they've never sometimes even seen a Middle Eastern person, let alone a Syrian person, and kind of be able to curate a conversation they might otherwise never have. Mm-hmm. And so I think they understood how passionate I was through
That's
this.
Awesome.
And they just, you know, of course, they worry about your well-being. But it's like it's an Arab parent's job to be worried.
So of course, to follow your passion and you know start your own, it's whether your own band or your own startup or your own company, it needs a lot of resilience, needs a lot of passion, and I said a lot of determination. Do you think? And you know, like as immigrants, especially from Syria, entrepreneurship is embedded in our DNA. Like everyone back home, eventually wants to start his own shop, his own thing, his own business. Do you think if you, for example, you would have had the opportunity to work in a new fresh startup, or for example, work with Spotify or work with like Apple in Apple Music kind of thing, would you have done that like in a kind of startup kind of environment, or you still prefer to pursue like your own thing, your own identity?
I guess, I mean, you never know, right? You can only sort of assess out of your own personal experience.
Right.
And, you know, I think that whether you jump into something like Spotify or, you know, I worked for a startup really, cars.com was like the automotive side of it.
Right.
But, you know, wherever you're at, if it's Spotify or Apple Music, like if you're on a different end of it, like you're on sort of the music and curation end of it. And, you know, I thought about that too, because when I was at Ohio State, I also, you know, I was part of the music entertainment industry student association. So I worked with people who were interested in getting in on the business side of the industry. But it's like I wasn't really interested in going into the music industry from that side because the music industry is a really there's a lot of questionable things that happen, and it's an industry that's really struggling, and there's egos left and right.
I see.
And so, you know, I think if I was going to be connected to the music industry, yeah, it's important. It's important to have that business knowledge.
Exactly.
And to have an understanding of what's happening within the music business, so you can sort of leverage yourself and be aware of your options.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's like, for me, what was important was my brand, my personal brand and connection through this, and how I can use my voice to challenge those dynamics that I have issues with within the music industry.
So, I mean, to follow up on that, do you think that Chicago actually was a very hospitable place, being like a very diverse city, like a very big market, for you to come and start here and like kind of pursue your music in Chicago versus like being in Ohio or being in any other American city?
Yeah, I mean, Chicago is there's so much here and it's endless. It's like no matter what you do, there's always going to be something new. And it's there's a lot of talent everywhere. So there's always a way to grow and to challenge yourself and to immerse yourself in it. So yeah, without a doubt, you know, I think versus when you're comparing to Ohio, though, versus New York City or LA, it's like
right.
a different ballgame, right? Because Chicago is not a big hub for like music entertainment industry, right? Like in terms of agents, labels, etc. There's not a big it's the chances of you running into a major label executive or like the big guy at Spotify who's going
right.
to throw you on their like master playlist or whatever. It's not you're not going to run into that as easily here. But fortunately, it's a good hub to be able to do like a lot of touring from and to be able to still get to places like New York.
Right.
To be able to perform and run into people like that. But you're not it's going to take more work in a place like Chicago.
But you do feel like the audience is like way more receptive. They like to hear all different kind of music. They like to, you know, go out and like listen to new bands, emerging bands.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, also, so I think you could say the other way too. That was like there is so much talent here that it takes a lot of extra work to show people that like that it makes sense for them to be part of your experience, part
right.
of your community, part of your movement, because everybody here is busy and hustling and trying to make a life, you know? So, like, what? Their time is valuable. Why are they going to show up and be supportive? Honestly, I find that when we go sometimes into these other cities, it's like they don't get as much of it, so it's easier for them to be excited and to show up and to give it an opportunity. So
nice.
You get both sides.
So all this competition in the city, and you made it to performing on Navy Pier, you performed in Millennium Park, and so many awesome places. I mean, I bet everybody wants to perform in Millennium Park, and you did it. How did you guys
do that?
That's
impressive.
That's really impressive. That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate it. You know, with that situation, it's so funny, because it's like you could spend so much time, you could email them every single day and not get a response. But for us, it stemmed out of our South by Southwest showcase a couple years ago. Right after the travel ban hit the United States, we were part of an official showcase at South by Southwest called Contraband that featured artists from the diaspora of countries targeted by the immigration ban. So
nice.
We represented Syria as part of that, and it led to a ton of national press. So we'd had our album premiered by Noisy, which is like owned by Vice Magazine. But also, you know, we were then featured by like Al Jazeera and NPR and Huffington Post, and it's like it was kind of constant. And then
that's awesome.
Literally, the guy from Millennium Park had sent me an email on an email I sent him maybe 3 years prior, and I was like, "Hey, are you available this date?"
You're like, "No, let me think about it."
Yeah. So a lot of times, there's just this compounding effect of something like that, and once you kind of get a little bit of that buzz, curators and stuff that you might have tapped at 5-6 years ago,
yeah.
They're like, oh yeah, you know, he had downloaded this in the very back of his brain and it came back to the front.
Right.
So those connections, it matters, you know. Sometimes I think artists especially get very discouraged, or anybody. It's like you do a lot of that outreach and you can't expect immediate results all the time. You're building long-term relationships with people, you're building a brand, and you're planting a seed every time you make that type of connection, and you're watering it over time, and eventually the hope is it flourishes.
Do you think your interesting background of business? I mean, you did that in college. You studied that academically. Do you think, and you mentioned that a minute ago, that gave you leverage. Do you think what kind of leverage it gave you, like in terms of managing your band, managing your day to day operation? You know, you were in supply chain, so you know the logistics, all that. Did that give you an extra edge versus somebody who's only passionate about music and has to hire a manager or something?
And just to say, you just came back from a tour when you were on how many cities?
We are in the middle, really.
In the middle of the tour. Wow.
of over 50 cities this
wow.
spring and summer. Without a doubt, I mean, there's no doubt about it that it has been super, super helpful. You know, it's kind of amazing. The more artists that I meet and that I work with, I realize how few of them had any type of business education, or any sort of training on
that's
how
a big
to
plus
be
for you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, artists is. All of us, really, anybody is an owner of your brand.
Exactly.
You're an entrepreneur, and everybody who's in
exactly.
music, for the most part, is, so many of them are entrepreneurs, and they don't know how to own their brand, and they're getting no education on this, but then they're expected to go out there and to figure it out. And I feel like half of what they end up doing is music, if that, and the other half is this other end, being, you know, this building your website, building your brand, getting the next gig, and putting your portfolio together. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have the organizational skills to be able to sort of plan what is my outlook here, what is my 1-year plan, my 3-year plan, my 5-year plan,
mm-hmm.
or to build a budget and to know, you know, Microsoft Excel like incredibly well, like through and through.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, using Google Docs and what it's like to work in as part of a team of people
right.
and to have shared resources and to schedule check-ins or whatever, like all of these things have been so instrumental in meeting a group of people.
I mean, the amount of work that you need in the back end to be able to hit 50 cities on a tour, that must require, like, amazing organizational skills and, like, so much effort that people really don't see it. I mean, people see you on the stage performing, and that's the end of it. But the amount of work that took in order for you to get to that stage and perform for that hour, I mean, that's a huge amount of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to like even beyond that, it's like whenever you're talking to a music label or a booking agent or a publicist or something, I think a lot of artists do get so excited. It's like, oh man, you know, like we've been waiting for this type of relationship, and it's easy for other parties to kind of take advantage of artists who are like so enthusiastic but don't have the background to like know that those the self check, you know. And I think my background allowed me the opportunity to really like challenge the process and to be intelligent about like the types of questions I ask and to do the
mm-hmm.
research I need to make sure I don't end up in some kind of you know bad situation or something.
That's a really good point. Did you ever pursue having a mentor to kind of help you through these things?
Oh yeah. His name is Ahmed Galam, and his artist name is Sin Kane, and the guy is just unbelievable. He's like an internationally touring artist who's just he's always been like a long term mentor and brother.
Wow,
nice. Do you in like doing the tour, doing all that, you know, now in the age of you know web 2.0, the social media, the like you know the internet in general, how do you think leveraging you know like Instagram, Facebook, Spotify, all that versus somebody, for example, like in the early 2000s or 90s, has to go knock on doors on big records or MTV or whatever to for people to hear his music.
Find or be found.
It's so important. I mean, look at the reason that we're in the same room today is because, you know, at some point I saw a Facebook event about an event at the college or something and reached out. You know, it's like these tools give us so much extra personality and exposure that we otherwise just would have never had. This ability to make a one-to-one connection in a way that
mm-hmm.
we never were able to before.
That's awesome. Okay, so I want to hear about your new album. I know that you guys are releasing a new album, so tell us a little bit about it.
Yes, it's called Smoke and Mirrors. We'll release it in May. We released the debut single in February, and we have other music coming out with it and music videos over the course of the spring and summer while we tour all over the country. So we are thrilled about this new album. The album itself is called Smoke and Mirrors. The whole idea is it dismantles this perception of glamour and glitz that people seem to perceive of entertainers and artists.
Interesting.
Well, kind of like you were alluding to before, they see somebody on stage and he's like, oh, this guy's killing it. But, you know, the type of anxiety and depression and just issues of mental health that artists really experience is profound, and it's a serious problem. And, you know, I think artists are expected to really swallow that and show this
mm-hmm.
This personality of like nothing's going to stop me and like, look how cool I am. And, you know, but then inside, I think everybody's just struggles so much. So I think it's it's really important to shine a light on that. The more that we see artists struggling out there, and we hear about entertainers
right.
who've committed suicide or really gone into these like terrible,
very tragic stories,
spiraling
yes.
problems, because you know they and everybody was so surprised and wonders what they could have done differently. So my goal through this is to shine a light on them and to make sure it's prevented.
That's awesome. You're on a mission, man.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a great idea.
That's
so
awesome.
So where can people listen to your music?
Bassel Music. B-A-S-S-E-L. BasselMusic.com. Everything is right there. All our social media. It's on Spotify, iTunes.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
We'll have a link here for our audience, and our audience will also be listening to some of your music during this episode. That's awesome. Well, Bassel, all the luck. This is Bassel and the Supernaturals. I highly recommend that you guys listen to it. We really appreciate you taking the time in the middle of your tour to be with us. So excited to connect with you and chat with you, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much. I just want to give a shout out to, I know that you've talked to Karam Foundation, and that's an organization that we are incredibly close to. They do amazing work, and we always donate a chunk of our merchandise proceeds to their cause. And thank you for supporting them. Thank you so much for amplifying our cause and for just featuring other out-of-like professionals in this beautiful city that we live in.
Thank you so much, Bassel. The pleasure is ours.